This is New Comedy Radio, Sabrina George interviewing Lynn and Sally, known probably better as James and Nettleton. You're not really known as Lynn and Sally, are you?
No, we're not. We keep that quiet.
Yes.
Keep it quiet.
Obviously, to our selected group of comedy friends, we are known as Lynn and Sally. They're now actually...
But very often they get us rather wrong way. Yeah.
Well, they don't now. Now no, they know. They, don't. They go Lynn, tall one, Sally, other.
Right, first question. Yes. Oh, look, and there's a little dark one following behind. Is she really necessary?
A little impended.
Yes. I'm like a bag chain.
So first question, because this is part one, is I'll ask Sally first, the appendage.
Yes, the appendage.
What was the first action you took to get into comedy?
First action?
Yes.
Oh,
she's putting on an intellectual voice.
I am, yes, obviously. Well, she's asked me about an action.
I've got to search for action in my head. It's not a place I've gone very, very often.
It was actually going to a comedy club. And I went to the Newcastle Comedy Club and I sat on my own at the back in a kind of nobody talk to me, don't come near me, anybody on stage. And I observed and I watched people like... Milton Jones and Dylan Moran and Bill Bailey and Owen O'Neill. Owen O'Neill was the first comic I saw and I was blown away.
But why did you want to be a comic that took you into the club to do that?
Because, weirdly, bits of it started to pop up on television more and more.
Right.
Not just people that were perceived as the kind of the new guard, as Fortune Saunders or Brian Laurie, all of these people that were just suddenly popping up on the television. I suddenly thought, actually, there are people who are not on the television who are doing comedy. I think it might have been a thing on live TV, which is now a defunct television station, and they were interviewing comics in Edinburgh, and they were showing short slips, so it was a cable thing. And I started to go, do you know what, there is another comedy circuit out there. Just disappeared on my own. Lynn and I were sharing at the time, but we weren't, Lynn was away on the ship. And I just went up on my own and I just got hooked. I think I'd always loved comedy. I'd always watched, you know, when I was 9, I was dressing up as Billy Connolly.
So that was the first action you took.
Do you know what? You're right.
That's the one I want to hear about.
Yes, you're right. Actually,
this is bullshit this about is so going to some club in your
I'm really comfy as well. It's just like psychotherapy. No, you're right. When I was a girl guide, we did a gang show, and everybody else sang songs and played guitars, and I had a little piece of electrician's tape over my face, with my hair stuffed down a very large jumper, going, "So, ladies and gentlemen, right, okay, oh, oh, oh," and being Billy Connolly.
How old are you?
9. Nine's unusual for cross-dressing.
And you'd seen him on telly?
I'd seen him on telly. I'd seen him on Parkinson.
And that's what...
Oh, yeah. Love just... I mean, I'd never... Also, so it is the effect it had on everyone in the room while I was watching the television. My sister just shrieking laughter. And, you know, watching my mum just jiggling up and down. And me just thinking he was just... Just outrageous. Yeah, I guess that was it. That's when I went, I want to be Billy Connolly. Yeah.
And then what did you do at school? Did you do drama or did you do...
Well, because I grew up in Wensleydale, it was a very small school. We didn't even have a drama department. We didn't really put on shows or anything like that because nobody could really be bothered. Occasionally, I would have a madcap idea to stand up in assembly and do something, which was really me making a tit of myself.
But there wasn't enough people at school all the time.
There wasn't.
They were too busy lambing.
Yes, exactly. We had a school farm, yes. There was the LADS, which was the Labour and Amateur Dramatic Society, but you never got a very good part because it was always being done by somebody who was about 70. So I don't know, but I'd always like performing, and I just always thought, well, I'll just go to drama school, that's what I'll do, because that sounds like something that I'd quite enjoy. But in a strange way, I never really felt that acting was quite me. But it seemed the nearest thing. And I thought, that'd be alright. Do that.
So that was the direction you might went into.
And my mum said, you can do anything you like as long as you get a degree. So I went, okay.
And what about you, Lynn? What was your first action that you
can
remember? My first
action? I think I've always, I'm the youngest of six, I'm from a big family, so basically to get any attention whatsoever, you have to be, my family are all mental and all hilarious. So I remember telling jokes as a kid and loving the attention that I got from adults. And some of them were probably quite rude jokes that my father had told me, but that I didn't know at the time were rude jokes. So I remember getting a reaction, which I liked. And that was probably just being the centre of attention, but I love to sing, you see. It was a singing for me, whereas Sally was more interested in the comedy. For me, I always wanted to be a singer as a child. So I wouldn't be happy unless it was like a Christmas party and I'd got up and give a song. And I'd get either the hairbrush or the thing that we rake the fire with. And I'd
the poker.
It was like this little thing that you got. You put it in the bottom of the cork fire and you raked it across the bottom to get all the clinkers through. So I used to use that because it was quite a nice sort of weight and quite a nice size. And I'd stand and I would give a song. So I'd always sang and always performed as a little child. And the size of me now, you would never think I was a little child ever. But yes, I'd always performed.
Were you encouraged, or did you take no notice of?
No, it was. Well, I was never encouraged to perform necessarily. It was always like, oh, Lynn's got a canny voice, or oh, lovely, very good, smashing. Now, what are you going to do? Just don't do anything you like. Just don't work in a factory. That's what I was told.
Right.
So I had a completely different. My parents were in their 40s when they had me.
Were they putting you up for competitions?
Oh, God, no.
No.
No, none of that. No, I mean, it wasn't even when aunts and uncles or anything came round. It was literally just for the family. It was never... I always wanted to perform, but I didn't quite know how to do it. And at school, we did have the music teacher pick me out, and I would sing solos in the choir. I was in the choir. We did shows at school, and I would get parts in the shows at school, so I always performed. But nobody, I didn't even know there was such a thing as drama school. It was never ever mentioned to me. It was like I lived in a small town in the northeast of England. You know, it was the sort of 70s, and it was just never mentioned. It was like, well, great, lovely, smashing, you can sing, and brilliant. All the family would come up with like a three-line whip when the shows were on at school. There'd be like three rows of my family, we'd all be there. But it was never thought of that that could be a career. It just was never discussed, and I never thought about it. I just...
Presumably they had no idea, even if they wanted you to be the singer, how you would go about it either.
No, it was like, I mean, my brothers and sisters, and the majority of now have got their own businesses and stuff, but at the time, they were all, you know, my brothers were down the pit. One of my brothers nearly lost an arm down the pit, and so they, you know, real manual sort of labour.
Like, yeah.
And it was always, you know, my sisters worked at GEC on the lines making telephones, and it was just like, whatever you do, don't work in a factory. That was what they used to say to me. So I, you know, didn't go to university, but I went to technical college, which for my family was like, oh my God, she's a genius.
And what did you do there?
I did secretarial work. So I did a sort of secretarial course, got a job, and got to work for Flymo, the lawnmower people.
Fabulous.
Fantastic. And there was a guy there who was really inspirational, who then took me to one side and said, I see a spark in you in terms of work-wise, and put me and sent me for marketing courses, and I ended up becoming PR manager for Flymo
for the UK and Europe. That was nothing you don't know about Flymo.
Exactly. That was my journey to that point. But I had this burning desire to perform.
So then what happened?
Then I got married. I got married when I was 6 days after my 21st birthday. It was my first boyfriend. I was 14 when we met. I got married at 21. And I was married for 10 years. And then I just thought, I've got to perform. I just can't do this anymore.
So what were you doing for that 10 years? Were you still in choirs?
I was at Flymo. I started to join choirs. And my husband didn't like it. It was a real northern No, I trust you, which other men I don't trust, and didn't want me to go out and want me to do any of that, so I was really doing very little performing. I sang in a ladies' choir called the Richardson Singers in Darlington for about 2 or 3 years, and I was probably the youngest member they had. The rest of them were all sort of in their 50s, 60s, 70s. The eldest was about 80, and we wore these lovely purple velvet capes that were gorgeous, and we sang all of the and all of that kind of stuff. But it was a performing outlet. And then, as I say, my ex-husband wasn't very keen on that. And it just got to the point where I was really getting frustrated with everything and the marriage. And I basically left. And it was just before Christmas. And I thought, I need to do something to get me through the Christmas. So I had my job at Flymore. But I knew that, what was I going to do over the Christmas period? So I'd seen in the paper that they were looking for singers to perform at a medieval banquet at a local hotel up in the northeast of England. And I thought, and I didn't tell anybody, because I thought, if anybody poo-poos this idea, I won't go.
You'll shrivel and die.
I will shrivel and die. And you wouldn't believe it, because I'm 6 foot and I've got a mouth the same size, but I was so... I so lacked self-esteem in that performing area. I was absolutely...
Why weren't your family demanding you spend Christmas with them?
No, I was spending Christmas and stuff during the day, but in the evenings, what was I going to do? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It was kind of like... I mean, obviously I had a big family. I was staying. I actually left my husband and I went and stayed with my brother for a week, and then I went and stayed with my parents. And all of my family were all around me, so I had all of that to be with them. But it was just... In the evenings, what am I going to do? You know, I don't want to sit in with my mum and dad and watch the telly. And I knew that I wanted to do something else. So, I went along for the audition and got it and couldn't believe it. I was over the moon. And they told me to come back the next day on the Saturday morning. They wanted to hear me sing. And I literally went in the next day with all of these people. Still haven't told any of my family I'd got this other little job, which would be every evening and weekends. I mean, particularly on a weekend. What was I going to do? Because all my friends were married, they all had kids. You know, I was the first person in my family ever to separate. I didn't know anybody who was divorced. Everybody, my mum and dad, my dad died a couple of years ago, they were married for 66 years, my parents. So, literally, it was a big taboo to get divorced. It just didn't happen. I went for this audition, and on the Saturday morning, get in there, and I'm singing up on stage, and the rest of the cast came in, who they'd already cast the day before, and Sally was one of them.
I just left drama school.
Let's go back to your story now.
So if you say about comedy, I really didn't, in terms of my first action, I guess I'd always enjoyed the attention, the performing. But for me, and I loved comedy, and I love Billy Connolly, and I love Morecambe and Wise. And
were you going with your husband to see anything live, or was everything...
Good heavens,
no.
Oh, hang on a second. No, we went to see Ben Elton. But really, no, nothing, rarely anything like that. But it really, I got introduced to stand-up after meeting Sally.
It's all her fault.
It's all her fault.
Yeah, but the reason we're together, I think, is her. And to be honest with you, we both thought it was going to be an awful lot easier than do it on your own, and it's not. It's a myth.
It is. It's really hard to be.
It's a really dirty, filthy lie.
It is.
We should just warn people about that.
So let's go back to you. So you were at drama college.
Yes.
Why did you choose the drama college you went to?
Because they let me in.
They let me.
None of the others would have.
No. I went to the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama in Glasgow, with Doctor Who, as it goes. It's me and David Tennant, and there's quite a number of people that are, you know, Greg Wise.
What's David Tennant doing now?
I don't know. Do you know what? I feel that his career will come good at some point.
Yeah, because he was always a nice lad.
We auditioned on the same day, and I always said, David, don't worry, don't fret.
Did you say, I'll look after you?
I did. I went, you know, I believe in you.
Yeah.
And he went, anyway, no.
So you went to drama school, and were you, what were you doing? Doing comedy, writing, acting? learning
stuff. Do you know what? I do spend an awful lot of time doing movement classes.
Yeah, and she does good glue.
Oh, actually, yes. Glue is one of my unsown talents.
Glue as a speech?
No, glue is a physical action.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
yeah. It's a shame this is not visual, because...
Oh, do you know what? It's the most amazing thing to end a dinner party with.
Clear the tables!
Which is probably why I don't get asked too many. I seem to remember a series of classes that were all about pointing out why none of us were talented in the first place. I think most drama schools have this effect on people. They tend to take you as what you are perceived as raw talent. They then break that all down. They tell you about the speech impediment you didn't realise you had, and the odd walk, and the strange...
Walleye.
Exactly, the strange position of your pelvis, and, you know, the kind of particular hint that you've got in your breath. But what they forget to do is build up your confidence again at the end of it. So I think what happened while I was at drama school, and I did make some very, very good friends that I am still in touch with. Not many, and I think, you know, that happens.
That's
me all. I don't have many friends. I have an inner sanctum. But the point is that actually I kind of retreated into myself. I became very Dales, you know what I mean? I was just like, you know, I'm from the Dale, and this is a bit of nonsense, really. Whereas I was always a bit odd when I was
in the Dales.
And then kind of went to drama school, and then actually hung on to
retrenched.
Exactly, and I think this happens to a lot of people. And I think it takes you a long time to just go, ah, do you know what? I am what I am. And I think comedy is brilliant for that. If you actually allow comedy in, and you let yourself work with it, you get so real that it makes you very happy, actually. And I would say that it is
a very good thing.
It is hugely very good. And I had to learn. I've had my journey through comedy has actually been to learn to be myself.
So were you doing this at drama college? Were you doing the odd night? Or
never.
Nothing?
Never.
Writing
not
a sketch?
Not a bean.
Not a sausage?
Not a sausage. I did a little bit of directing, because a friend who then later directed us for our first Edinburgh and is now a television producer kind of went, I want to do a play and you're going to direct me in it. Because I think she thought, do you know what, she can do it, she's got a good eye. So I joined that, did that. I was in other people's plays because they kind of asked me. I was a bit lazy, really.
No, Sam.
I know.
That's not like you.
I sort of had a little bit of a, I'm kind of going through my O levels. Do you know what I mean? As long as I keep my head down and do the work, I'll pass. Then you just get tipped out in the world and you go, oh, but no one's told me how to fill in a P45. And I think that's what happens. I think a lot of people, you get into drama school because of your bluster and your kind of natural
joie de vivre, yeah.
Whatever it is. Yeah. And then you get to the end of it and you go, what am I going to do now? And so that's kind of where you then have to start working, because then you have to start going, actually, what do I really want to do? And through a series of doing children's theatre and a lot of stuff, actually, where there was no script. And I would be dressed up as one of the jobs I did, I was put into museums as an exhibit. Dressed in all of the clothes of, it might be a Roman citizen or a Celtic warrior, and then you've just given a lot of kids, and some information, and an hour, and you have to deal with them. And it's amazing how, to keep kids interested, you just find yourself making up gags. You're just making stuff.
What about that time?
You played Lady Derby.
Okay.
In some, she was this character, Lady Derby. We had wood in your underwear, was that the one?
No, that was a different one. Wood in my underwear was a different time period. Lady Derby was this, it was actually, the building was Disraeli's personal private residence, and Lady Derby was one of the pictures that were on the wall. And so this character, Lady Derby, was actually a real character, and she had this, you know, kind of heritage of living in one of the country houses in Kent, and one thing and another. And I found myself with these teenagers who were just more interested in just getting off
willies and bottoms, and yeah,
exactly. And I'd be standing there, and I'd they'd enter the room, and I'd do this big swish in my dress, and I'd go, "Oh, hello! Oh, do come in. Now, this isn't my house, but oh, have you seen my house? Oh, no, you know? Oh, do you know? No, have you been? Oh, the house parties we used to have, Noel's house parties." And the teachers were just going, "Who is this evil woman?" But actually, it kind of, you know. It kind of loosened me into comedy. Another one was where I was playing a Celtic warrior, and the guy who was the head of the company was a guy who used to do the best roles for himself. So he was like, "Right, I'll be the Roman," because when it comes to the information that you teach the kids, obviously the Romans did quite a lot for us, you know, with the kind of the centripetal and the broads and all of that kind of Celts, roundhouses, chopping people's heads off, yeah. But I was a little bit more glitzy in my performance than he was.
This is a debate with the kids.
At the end, you know, 7 and 8 year olds, so by the end of it, they're all in the big debate, and they've all heard from the Roman, and they've all heard from me. And they have to kind of decide who is the best kind of civilization, you see. And I've told them loads of things about, you know, what do you mean central heating? Roundhouses, we had a fire in the middle, how much more central is that? You know what I mean? And I've played with them around, and we've had gags and stuff. Eventually, this guy, this Roman, gets up, and he's really slating me. And he's going, "Oh, you don't want this," and they chop your heads off, and they do this. And this little boy at the back of the room stood up, and he shot his hand at me, and went, "Yes! But you killed Jesus Christ!" At which point, we called a break. But when they voted, I know that they all wanted to be Celts, didn't they? The kids all wanted to be Celts. So kind of, you know, the
pompous Romans didn't do it for them.
I was kind of passing through with that, but it's one of the things.
So this is how you got to be a medieval chorister at this Christmas event where Lynn was.
This is all after that. The medieval chorus was the thing that I did straight after drama school, because I was looking for a job. I wanted to get my equity card, and I thought that if I went along and I kind of, you know, worked up my hours, then I would get my equity card.
So that's when equity card is the actors' union card, for those who don't know, and you used to have to work for like 2 years to get a full one or something.
It's really weird.
And now
what
you don't
used to have. No, but what they had then was really difficult. You actually had to have contracts, paid contracts, to show equity that you'd been working as a performer and paid officially with contracts. But very often you couldn't get the paid work and the contracts unless you were an equity member. So it was really, really
well, a lot of mates I know who went from the London colleges went and worked in the strip clubs, because that was called qualified as variety.
Right. Yeah.
So if you did the strip and you did, it was called variety, and if you got X amount. So Paul Raymond, the big porn king, he made a fortune out of girlies trying to get their equity cards.
Well, it's funny.
It was one of the scandals. It was like one of the farces of it, which is why they've let it go.
I remember when I just left the stage, and in the back there would be adverts for variety, which was one of the reasons why I ended up doing this gig at Redforth, because it just seemed to be the easiest way of doing it. And I remember ringing up for one, and I was like, "Right, okay." And she was like, "Right, you know, like, go in, yeah, okay, right, if you just meet downstairs, and you'll meet Susie, and she will take all the details, and oh yeah, if you could bring swimwear." At which point I thought, I don't think this is quite me. So yes, that's how I ended up.
A friend of mine did the Folie Bergère, and the only reason she went was because she was the right height. She couldn't dance, she couldn't move, and they put her in the Folie Bergère outfit of someone who was about size 8, and she's like your sort of height.
Just like,
you know,
get your tits out and you're in the back.
Yeah, and she didn't even have any tits. She had to fill it all in, but she was in agony. But after 6 months she got her equity card. She was absolutely hopeless. She couldn't sing, couldn't dance, couldn't anything. She wanted to be an actor, but it didn't work out either. So going back to you, sorry, but
sorry,
it was a hilarious story. So were you singing at drama college, or were you singing to get your equity card and sort of got where you were passable? And
singing.
So was singing ever part of the picture, really, or did it sort of come in?
Do you know what? I only sing for money. I don't consider it one of my talents. However, I have conned people in the past that I can sing. I take for my inspiration on the singing front Rex Harrison. because I think
I aspire to be Rex Harrison, actually.
Well, I'm not saying I'm there yet, but I can say Eliza wears my slippers at any point. I think my pride in my lack of talent got a little bit out of gear because I did go for an audition. This is in the early days. This is after I've come out of drama school and don't know what the hell I want to do. And in stage, Phantom of the Opera. And I thought, that'll do. Maybe not Christina, you know, but I could do chorus. Do you know what I mean? I've been in the Brownies, you know, I can...
Billy Connolly with some tape.
Exactly. So I went to Manchester and I sat on the stairs of one of the very large stages there for about a couple of hours. And blimey, I looked like a singer.
I looked like an opera singer. She had a fur coat on.
Yes.
Honestly, she looked the part. She dressed for it.
My hair was enormous. I just thought, do you know what?
Do you have a set of pearls?
I didn't have a set of pearls.
You see, that's what that's.
But that fur coat was just doing it for you, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, I waltzed in there and I just thought, do you know what? I'm just going to blind them with the image. And
then,
yeah, exactly. And I'll probably get a few quid a week or something, you know what I mean? And I went, fish got a son. And they went, next! 2.5 hours is that on the steps.
1.5 word song.
Exactly. You know, and you just kind of go, but there's no manager. So then I started applying for stage management jobs because I thought I'm quite handy at things like that. And I ended up working for Durham Theatre Company, which is why I ended up moving
a house with me. So you, hang on, you just to get this critical meeting point, you were...
She just left drama school.
I just left drama school. She just left me husband.
Right.
She was very friendly.
This is before this. I want to hear the lead up because it's quite important. Okay. So you've joined this medieval singing thing for Christmas and you can't sing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're sitting somewhere...
I was singing, acting and serving the food.
Yes. And I tell you what, I'm a tidy waitress. You know what I mean? And
most actors are.
Exactly. And also, to be fair, it was not exactly...
Well, you got the lead role.
I did get the lead role.
Wasn't it really... There was no singing.
There wasn't a lot of singing.
It was chorus singing for the lead role.
Exactly. It was more a case of...
I got a solo.
Prancing around.
That's what I'm saying. So you're sort of sitting in a room somewhere with your other mates being wenchy and thinking about you're supposed to be singing, and suddenly you hear this voice and all of you go in.
Mm.
And you hear Lynn singing, you go, what?
Well, actually, that's not far from it.
Well, so I was singing when you came in.
I was on the stage. It was the Great Hall, because it was an old hotel, and it had a very old part that was where
the minstrel's gallery and all that kind of thing. It's very medieval
and
kind of look.
Yes, I just remember going in and kind of going, all right, she's got a kind of hair on, she can sing. But you know what? The thing with me is, I never really... I mean, they'd already decided what they wanted me to do, which was this kind of lead role. But it was more, you know, move the kind of the wenches and the medieval kind of banquet idea slightly to one side and put in panto.
It was closer
to what the truth of it was. So
everyone I've seen like that is more like panto.
It was panto.
They sell it on one thing, but
they had two kind of warring families. It was a bit Romeo and Juliet in one way, but they had Jack and Jill, and she played the Jill role, and then there were the Surtees and the Crosses, and there were two families that had been sort of lived up in the northeast in those sort of times, so they based it loosely on that. And it was this thing about Jack and Jill trying to get together.
The script was pretty poor, as was the directing, which meant that 2 weeks in, I went, this is never going to work, and went, look, we need to get together. So I blocked it while Lynn stood next to me like a Rottweiler, going, listen, she's been to drama school, she knows what she's talking about. And me thinking, oh my, I've never needed backup before, but clearly I've got it whether I want it. I'm not.
And you're dead impressed because she's using all this vocabulary you'd never heard of before.
When I met her, I couldn't believe it because I'd hardly been out the northeast. I had, because my job, that was half of the problem, I think. My job had taken me all over the world, and my ex-husband couldn't stand the fact that I was doing well at work and travelling all over. So it became more and more difficult, and I had to fit into this role. Every time I came home, I had to fit into this suit that didn't fit me anymore. because I'd started travelling and I'd been to Monte Carlo and I'd been to Spain, we'd done all these events and stuff all over the world. But I'd certainly never met another performer what I perceived to be at that point.
Even your hands now are holding up like a proper holy grail.
I was like, when we met, we ended up sitting down next to each other because I sort of did this audition, and then we went upstairs and we had to go and sit in this room when they took us over and told us what we were doing. And but we all sat together and having cups of tea and what have you, and I literally sat next to Sally and I went, oh, and you know, and I am very friendly.
Pushy.
I am very friendly. I'm over-friendly.
Over-friendly. Pushy.
Over-friendly, over-helpful.
Particularly people who've been to drama school.
Exactly. But you know, I start to have a chat to her, and then she tells me she just left drama school, and I'm like, oh my God, that's fantastic. Oh, I've always wanted, I wish, you know, I was basically going, I wish I'd done that.
Open
sesame. Oh my God. And so I wasn't going to let her get away, do you know what I mean? I was just absolutely fascinated. And we came outside, so we ended up chatting. We came outside, we walked out together, and literally, I walked out of the car. Did I try to give you a lift or something?
Oh, yeah. You're always trying to push people in the car. She collects. And she looked up and she kind of swayed around and went, oh, isn't it a lovely day? I've just left my husband. And I thought, she's properly nutcase.
You did think, I must keep away.
I must keep away.
And it was the day after you'd left jail?
It was I left on the 5th, and that was the 8th we had the audition. Yeah, 5th of November it was, I left. There were some fireworks that night, and it was literally the 8th. So it was a few days. I was mental. I was off my rocker. I was mental.
With joy or tragedy or excitement?
Well, no, just, I think I was just emotionally in a tense. I was terrified, excited. It was like everything, I swear to God, everything looked, all of a sudden I noticed the colours of everything. Everything was really bright. I was proper bonkers. I was proper bonkers, but lovely bonkers.
Yes, we won't say the other.
Yes, can I swear on that?